Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom, boom, boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
This is literally the loudest rain sound I have ever heard in my entire life. But only once we hit record, that's when it happens. My name is Eric, and here with me today to bear witness is Michael Kester.
Hello. I'm here today to bear witness.
Okay. Are you just finding that out, or what are you bearing witness to?
A weird aspect ratio for fucking one.
Yeah.
I witnessed a real bizarre aspect ratio today.
I like how you come on the show. We're doing The Lure and The Untamed.
Mm-hmm.
I like how you come on here and you're like, you know what was fucking weird about those two movies? The aspect ratio.
I've seen The Lure before. I haven't seen The Untamed. We're getting into a little bit of, it's like after hours creature feature, but like heavy on the sexy.
Uh-huh.
I feel like the best way to describe the theme today would just be to show the clip of the crater from The Untamed.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, that's a good mood to go in with. I don't think that that's how most people are going to approach this movie, but I think most people are going to approach these movies cautiously. I think that's the approach they take.
Or not at all, because there are subtitles.
Oh, don't even get me started on this. Everything that could be yours, if you could just clear your way over the 1-inch barrier of subtitles. Imagine, Michael, the things you could unlock in cinema, the cinematic potential before you with The Lure and The Untamed. Some people will not clear that 1-inch hurdle, but if they do, boy, are they in for a fucked up time. And really, I think I'm going to just leave the theme as ambiguous as fucked up time. I wanted art smut on the show today.
Cool.
And we've been trying to, especially the fucking Lure, I don't know why we've been trying to pair it so frequently on the show. And we keep arriving at things that are just a little too like The Shape of Water, you know, just sort of like
spring.
Yeah, spring's interesting for a couple. Good early spring shout out on today's what the fuck is this double feature. But look, I'm really happy it's with The Untamed because it's we'll get into it on the show. No reason to spoil anything now, but we will spoil the movies. And without your support, the podcast will Patreon spoil itself.
Yeah, listen, without you guys,
I don't know.
Without you guys going to patreon.com/double feature, we can't spoil movies. And we know y'all like movies spoiled because that's what the internet is for. So
we'll talk about what happens and we will break down everything from the most basic of log lines to the most fucked up of themes, but we can't do it if there's no show. And so you can head over to patreon.com/double feature. You can put some money in, keep the show going, really come be part of this before our show evaporates into seafoam. How about that? Is that one okay?
There we go.
All right.
That's not bad.
I floundered for a bit. Don't say flounder. Fuck. Whatever. Patreon.com/double feature. Let's start with The Lure.
I think we start where we often start on double feature, which is the 1980s.
Uh-huh.
So The Lure, logline. Have you seen The Little Mermaid?
Oh.
Imagine How to Talk to Girls at Parties, but The Little Mermaid. You know the funniest fucking thing about How to Talk to Girls at Parties?
What? Okay.
Listen, it was this movie.
I'm listening.
It's this movie. It's this movie called How to Talk to Girls at Parties. We've done it on the show. When I saw that movie, I specifically was like, this is the most like minute, just most specific cinematic experience. And it's really sort of just become like the undercurrent of most art cinema that I then went and saw after. I even saw The Lure before and then came back after. I'm like, oh, it kind of has that same vibe. But
what a weird movie for you to plant in the sand.
It's so weird. So let's see, real log line. Couple of mermaids.
How long have you been in San Francisco now? You're already introducing that. You're just like, a couple of mermaids. Let me pitch you this idea I got. There's a couple of, you take mermaids meets Uber, boom, you got your startup.
Got an app idea for you. Imagine you're a couple of mermaids and you meet two guys from Mumford and Sons. And they have you as backup singers, but eventually you become the main act. You become the main attraction. Hell, you become the lure itself.
Whoa.
And then you fall in love with one of the guys who's not so into your tail.
Yeah, all right.
This is where you download, cut off your tail, and put on your legs. And then if you fail to get him to fall in love with you, you turn into seafoam.
You bury that deep in the privacy statement. Nobody will read it. The turning into seafoam. Let's actually stay on the log line for a minute, because there's a few things that I just find super funny. I mean, at every level with this movie, but just really, really like deep in their stuff. One, in this world, two mermaids go to this sort of like, double feature listeners might identify it as a sort of vaudeville show. It's an entertainment cabaret kind of thing they're doing there.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you're literally a fucking mermaid. You get hired to do this cabaret show. It doesn't pay, but you do get to be in front of an audience as the backup singers. You're a fucking mermaid. You don't even get first billing. You're the backup singer. That's crazy to me.
I mean,
I just like, really funny. Like, what does it take to break through in the world, Michael? You can't even.
Here's another thing, though, that you didn't mention, but you're also sort of talking about. And this is one of my favorite things about the lore. And it also plays into what's not in the log line, which is that there are some pieces to this mermaid tale that are like, listen.
Don't say tale.
If you get your flippers cut off and replaced with legs, if you get that standard surgical procedure done,
mm-hmm.
then there's a hard fucking rule in the sand that if you don't get the guy you did it for to fall in love with you, you turn into seafoam. Everybody knows this is the case.
Well, yeah, you don't. I heard it was just like a rumor. No. I heard this was not a real.
Meanwhile, the movie.
It's never been proven.
Absolutely does no work to let you know how they're breathing, how they got to the stage where, you know, there's, it's like so embedded in this like canonical piece of mermaiddom. And it even goes like, you lose your fin, you lose your voice, you know, mermaid shit.
Yeah, right, right.
But like
the rules that everyone knows.
But it just, that's like the one, it's like the one volume. It's like an eight volume set on the rules of mermaiddom. And it's like they sold them separately at a yard sale. And this is just based on volume 7.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of the things I love about the lure is the sort of, I've also seen this movie before. And, you know, it's, if just enough time passes that I kind of forget the rules, I get to have this unique experience of, when the police discover there's a murder, everybody in the room starts looking at each other like, oh, the police have discovered a couple of bodies. It seems like they've been mutilated. And next to the bodies are, you know, a set of footprints and some sort of reptile-like creature prints. And then everybody starts like sweating it. You know, they're getting nervous. They're looking at each other.
Checking their own feet. Like, are those my footprints?
Well, that's about the point that I start having questions about the mythology, right? Like, do people really think they're mermaids? I mean, the inherent tension of that scene is, oh no, the police, are they going to be onto us? Maybe they'll put two and two together, right? They'll go, there's all these flipper marks in the sand. Hey, wait a second. Didn't those two new mermaids just come to town? Like they're going to come knocking at the door. And so that's when I start wondering like, okay, so people don't think it's an act. They know there's like that they're mermaids and that's just accepted here, right? Like they're real mermaids. and everybody's okay with that in the world. And I don't know, I guess it's at the point that we get to the surgery where we're swapping the halves that I kind of go, oh, we have the answer to what is the mythology in this film, which is just like, not only have there just been mermaids or nobody gives a fuck, but they've been around a while and there's like a specialist you can go to who his specific niche surgery is like cutting off the bottom half of people and swapping them, you know, for better mermaid time. It's an elective mermaid surgery he does. That's about where we are.
I mean, there's a whole unwritten film here about the person who donated the legs to get the fin.
Right. Yeah. 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 It's the other movie in the double feature that we've been searching for.
There's a whole new Cold Souls-esque movie about someone who's just like, I kind of just like wish I had a fin.
Yeah.
Cause then I wonder about the biology, right? If Paul Giamatti subs his legs for a mermaid tail, if he were to go, this isn't working out, and get the reversal surgery that I assume you can also get in this universe, does he still have the like seafoam thing? Do you have to be born a mermaid?
Right, right.
Is somebody who's transmaid? Does the canon only apply to your biological birth? These are just wonderful questions that this movie raises.
Well, you know, when I talk to people about the metaphors in this film, sometimes I'll talk about some trans stuff and I get different reactions on it, right? And because it's mostly tongue-in-cheek, like it's a bottom surgery that's in the movie. Mm-hmm. That's like literally what the movie's doing. I don't know that the movie's intentionally talking about any of that, but the metaphorical implications of many of the different things that the movie's talking about, you know, they can, we're deep into fantasy, so they can apply to a variety of topics in pretty big, far-reaching ways. So you mentioned in your log line that these are two mermaids, they're coming to, you know, live human life. As it says in the movie, they are kind of on vacation here, this is not their world, and they start to have differing opinions about what their role in humanity is going to be. So these two girls kind of start growing apart. So, I mean, one of the more obvious themes that's grounded, can I say grounded on the show?
Yeah, that works.
Okay, that's a little more grounded, is you have like growing up and growing apart, right? Which is these two girls, they are, I mean, most importantly here, best of friends and do everything together, and are two of the only people who understand each other and really like the only family for each other in this world, especially in the human world. And as time goes on, even though they're doing everything together, their own ideologies and really kind of their paths in life and where they want to go changes. And I think when you're talking about development, it might mean different trajectories. If they're going to grow as characters, they might want different things. And so we see that, and I think that's a pretty grounded theme, right? That's pretty basic stuff. But then you get into the stuff that on the show before we've kind of talked about, well, what is the power of metaphor? Why use it at all? And I think The Lure is such a good example of this because we're so in fantasy that this could apply to so many different things. Maybe we'll just unpack it like, all right, we're looking at the log line here and we're kind of going, so what themes do we pull out of this? I also think there is this motif of not fitting in. You know, so like we see that actually a lot of times when they're talking to adults, it's this is the human world, they're the mermaids, the other characters don't understand what they're going through. And there's even a specific argument, I forget who one of the girls is having it. I don't know if you remember with who, but she's saying something to the effect of like, you know, I can't go out and do the things you can. And the woman replies, you know, well, yeah, but you're a kid. I don't know what kind of things she's thinking about doing, going to clubs or bars or what. They seem to get away with quite a bit, eating people whole, you know. But there is this idea of like, okay, so I'm a mermaid, I'm in a human's world, I don't fit in here. And I think like that's a pretty vague notion that could be broadly applicable. One, just to kids, right? You're younger, you can't do what all the adults are doing. And we see this in a lot of movies, especially when we were growing up, like the 80s kind of kid movies were about this. I also think it's a movie that's kind of about, imagine like the differently abled or the...
Right, that's what I was thinking.
Just
yeah.
non-typical lives, right? Yeah, just anybody who can't, even something like I've talked about having anxiety a lot on this show, you know, trying to do things that normal people do, but you're really fucking anxious, you just can't. You look out at the world and you go, God, I wish I could do that. I think that's what the surgery's about. You know, I think it's a little less about like, yeah, it's kind of chalked up to like, oh, she wants to be with this guy. But when we talk about, well, what is that really? I think it's really like she wants to be, you know, quote unquote normal. She wants to be able to just live among the people and do people type stuff.
Well, and I mean that whenever that's the question, it's always, you know, do you move a mountain or do you cut your fucking legs off, right? Because the other option in that scenario is to like just make the, you know, if we're talking about a planet, we're talking about a world that mermaids exist in this movie. And, you know, they're like, I just want to be normal like you. I mean, it's the same thing that you and I talk about often with the term supernatural, right? Where if, so you and I, it's been a long time since we brought this up, but you and I don't necessarily subscribe to the idea of ghosts, let's say.
Putting it lightly there.
Yeah. However, were evidence proposed to us that did in fact prove the existence of ghosts beyond a doubt, the term supernatural remains and ghosts are now excluded from that term.
Sure.
You know what I mean? They're no longer supernatural. They are part of the natural world.
This is cryptozoology, right?
Right.
Cryptozoology is the study of creatures that don't fucking exist. And if you find one, it's part of zoology. And you're studying creatures no one believes in. Yeah.
And so, I mean, so, you know, my point is like, if a mermaid says, I just want to be normal, it's like, sister, you exist. This is a normal occurrence to some degree.
Yeah.
Here's who's not fucking normal. That dude that doesn't want to sleep with a mermaid.
Oh, that took a bit of a turn there, Michael. I think I was all ready to be like, yeah, man, I'm following you. I totally get what you're saying.
But I mean, you know, that's sort of the youth element combined with the, you know, how you put it, differently abled element, which is that, you know, this person could, you know, if she were older, if she were more mature and had a better worldview, when fucking homeboy goes, I don't want to fuck your flipper, she would be like, well, fuck you. I'm going to find somebody that wants to fuck my flipper.
Oh, totally. Totally.
And that's where the weight of the two combine.
Well, again, to think back to some of those films I was talking about, how many of those, and we've done these movies kind of in the Breakfast Club era, they talk about, you know, Breakfast Club specifically, like prettying up the goth girl to make her more mainstream and vice versa. And we see this in a couple of these movies. This idea that you have to change something about yourself to be part of normal society and then you'll be successful, happy, whatever. And I think basically everybody who watches fucking movies now, you know, resists those ideas from back then. But just imagine even this movie being kind of the fairy tale that it is. If it had happened in a different time, you know, 100 years prior to this, the mermaids would have been stoned on the beach. Like in this movie, they have this opportunity to be fucking rock stars. And
well, backup rock stars, yeah.
Yeah, but eventually, you know, that's just about gatekeeping and the industry, Michael, and that's not.
Exactly. I mean, public opinion will eventually sway.
Yeah, they got to put in their hours.
You couldn't have a Lil Nas X 10 years ago.
Oh my God. Well, that's what I'm talking about, right? It's like, oh, so now they come to shore and they are vicious, they are bold, they are naked, they're all this stuff that, you know, someone can be, a mermaid can be in a more modern time where so many years ago, there was no room for like a mermaid walking in contemporary society. But there is still this theme that's very fitting, I think, to a mermaid story or a lot of these sort of extrapolated fairy tales. When you look at the metaphor, you are talking about somebody who wants to fit in and thinking about changing something in themselves. And so, you know, in the lure, that means you wind up as fucking seafoam because you get your heart broken. But I don't know, man, like maybe it's a stretch to say, don't change yourself, don't turn into seafoam. Maybe we're not really going that far. But these are the kind of things that you can fuck around in when you swing for the fences and go like full mermaid in your film.
I mean, if there were a list of things in current society that if I did them, I would turn to seafoam, I would keep that list handy, just saying.
Yeah, well.
Just saying.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't seem like like you would just turn to each other and go, no, that's a myth. That's like one of you should get on Reddit and see if anyone's had this problem before, you know?
Sure.
Just, I mean.
And if nobody's got video footage of it, listen, blanket rule, seafoam, aliens, ghosts, fucking non-racist Republicans, you name it. If you get one on video, I'll believe it. It's 2021. Everybody's got a fucking camera in their pocket.
And here I thought The Untamed would be the most controversial thing on the show today. This is The Untamed's a Mexican film, Spanish language film. It's I saw it the year that I also watched We Are the Flesh. Have you seen that yet?
I have seen that.
Yeah, another Mexican, just like super naked, super smutty movie.
You know, one of the things I don't think we've actually talked about on the show is, you know, we like horror movies, and South and Central America kind of running the show on horror films right now.
Oh yeah. I mean, it seems like every week I'm praising another country's amazing horror efforts. But yeah, there is a whole culture of horror coming out of Mexico that is, when we did Antrim and it played in Mexico, it was like you hear of a band blowing up in Japan. I mean, I just never experienced anything like it. People just immediately want to engage in huge numbers. And you don't really hear a lot. I mean, I don't hear a lot about that kind of fan base online. I'm not seeing like, I don't know. It's just not on my radar as much as, at least it was after Morbido and, you know, some of these festivals down there. So yeah, I found this movie. I mean, this was a couple of years prior to Antrim coming out, but there were just a lot of movies. I mean, Lures from about the same, it might not be the exact same year, but I think I saw them all around the same time.
Yeah, I mean, it's like within 3 years.
And ultimately, my goal on the show today is like, there's just not enough erotic movies, especially erotic genre movies happening on double feature, and I just wanted to wedge two in there. So why don't we try starting with a log line here?
Oh my God, dude, the log line on this is so easy. A troubled couple. Well, maybe it's easier to say it.
See, I already disagree.
It's easier to put this more specifically. A wife who's being cheated on by her husband and is unsatisfied in her marriage and sexual relationship finds the most unlikely of sexual partners in a tentacle alien who, you know, makes people come really good. Also, there's gay sex in it.
Yeah, there is a fuck ton to unpack. Again, bad phrase it's what's going to happen today. There's no avoiding it. I'm sorry. So I think the POV thing is sort of interesting. When we look at log lines, you know, we try to take an objective look at just baseline. What's the sort of pitch in the movie? How would you explain this movie to a friend is the way that I like to look at it. Log line's a very like fucking industry term, but essentially you want to tell your friend, hey, check out The Untamed. Now in a real conversation, when I go, hey, Michael, check out The Untamed, you're going to say what happens in it. I'm probably going to say something like, oh my God, joke about tentacles or, oh my God, I can't tell you, or wow, yeah, it's fucked, or just whatever weird. I'm not going to go when a couple is having, you know, marital troubles, raising kids, blah, blah, blah.
Well, I mean, I think you've got to log line what your log line is about, man. Because the question is actually
deep, Michael, deep.
Some bullshit, but the question is actually like, because you're not just describing it to a friend. Because if you were describing it to me, you'd go, you need to see The Untamed. And I would be like, who made it? And you'd go, I don't know. And then I would be like, cool. And that would be the end of that conversation, because I don't want you to tell me what it's about. And furthermore, if you were trying to talk to a friend about it that wasn't me, just somebody that was like more of a casual acquaintance, you wouldn't go,
I would make them sign a liability waiver. Before
you wouldn't go, here's sort of what happens. You'd go, have you seen this? It's kind of like that, but, and then you would like pepper sure, in some differences. Sure. So what you're actually doing is describing the movie to a blind person.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
That's what you're doing.
Well, with there are certainly many things you would miss in The Untamed by just getting like a dry synopsis. You know, like I think a big part of The Untamed is also, how does it make you feel?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that I've wanted to start with the log line again and again this year is because I feel like it gets everybody on the same page. And it also, like, it's been interesting how many times we've sort of had a debate about what characters to include or whose point of reference the movie kind of operates from. I mean, it doesn't open on this family. It opens on another girl. So there is a telling of the story that could be like, you know, when things go wrong between this girl and this tentacle, she has to go out and find another family. Because remember, she goes and finds the doctor to kind of replace herself, but that doesn't work out. And so it's just sort of like person after person. You know, I see the movie from the fucking tentacles perspective, right? I mean, that's my job to come on here and be like, let's talk about The Untamed from the tentacle perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But it really is the genre hook part of it is like there is an unsatiable tentacle that needs to find a person. And every time we revisit that big moment of the film or those big moments of the film, it's to kind of push a new person in front of the tentacle and go, I don't know, this one, does this one stick? But yeah, there. So these other characters, so of course there's the tentacle and there's the girl that it opens with, the doctor, his sister, and then most complicating of all, even more complicating than the tentacle, the brother's lover or the sister's husband, one and the same. And so this is where I think we start getting a lot of the themes that are like very complicated and kind of unexpected for what the movie's about. But that relationship, there's like a homophobia element of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's like a kind of shame that runs through this character's, specifically, I guess, his relationship with her brother. He's kind of ashamed of it. Also, it's infidelity, so he's not admitting it to his wife. And I think the most interesting part of the movie is where those themes and kind of the masculinity around that, that prevent him from having any like clear dialogue, where that also causes some mystery in the film over like, where is the danger coming from?
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, because I think the movie is intentionally vague about, okay, so her brother winds up in a coma, but because of the tentacle or because he got beat up by her husband, you know?
Yeah. Or beat up by somebody else. I mean, it could be, it's definitely, no, the thing, you know, going into The Untamed, I hadn't seen it, but I kind of, you know, I read the plot synopsis on Shudder as I clicked start.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of had like a vague idea. I didn't expect the execution to be what it was. But what I didn't expect was all of the like queer tones and homosexuality. And, you know, we talked about this a little bit when we talked about Moonlight too, but Mexican culture, just feel like there's built-in baggage. The like self-loathing gay sex.
Yeah.
Of everything that goes on in the movie, that's the graphic shit to me. And not because it's fucking sex. It's because it just feels the grossest, you know?
Yeah, well, the self-loathing part of it. And I also like the repercussions, the violence. We keep coming back to these different either threats of violence or specifically one character winding up in a fucking coma. I mean, it's hard to overlook that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you first find out that he's been hospitalized, you see him in this ditch, I do feel like it's left open-ended. Like, oh, is this a result of the creature? They do go back to it to state intentionally, you know, the creature's never hurt anybody before, right? And so then I start wondering like, okay, well, wait, the rabies, was that was just the jealous dog then that wasn't actually recovering for the creature? And so I don't know. I mean, I've seen the movie enough that I don't think I'm just getting confused about it, and maybe I am, but I do feel like it leaves some of that stuff open where you probably know by the end of the movie where all the assaults and damage and bites and, you know, like every time somebody's body is getting fucked up, where that comes from. But it does kind of leave it open to interpretation just enough for the monster to create like some character-based mystery, right? Like I guess what I'm getting at is the mystery is sort of how bad is the father?
Right.
How bad is her husband? Did he beat her brother to death? And of course, with all his own baggage and shame and homophobia and all of that, or was he just cheating? And like, where on the spectrum of guilt is he? And what makes that really interesting to me is we're talking about all of these things, you know, we're talking about shame and we're talking about the mystery elements. To think about how that relates to the tentacle fucking, you know, it's like if I told you, oh, you should see The Untamed, you know, there's some interesting themes around shame in it that might be good for X, Y, or Z conversation. You would look at it, see that it's about tentacle fucking and go, oh, yeah, shameful tentacle fucking. I'm sure that's what it is. You wouldn't go, oh, there's a character-based mystery that, you know, is assisted by whether or not the tentacle fucking is purely pleasurable or has an element of danger and pain to it. And it's just a lot of, it's an unexpected sort of motivation to give, or I'm not even really sure what to call it really, an unexpected role, I guess, for the monster to play in the film, the creature to play in the film. It's not the low-hanging fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this in really like some masterwork stuff that deals with sexual themes and genre. You know, I always think of like Clive Barker. I feel like anytime I talk to anybody about, not so much the Cronenberg crash, like that's the go-to joke for, you know, dealing with like fucked up sex and genre. But I feel like Clive Barker and Hellraiser, that's really when you start to get more into monsters and creatures and sex.
Yeah.
And those are also, you know, when we talk about Clive Barker, I feel like the shorthand is the like pleasure is pain kind of themes. But they're deeper themes that are done through genre, deeper themes about sex that are done through genre that aren't the most obvious ones. In here, there's this constant thing they talk about where the tentacle can give you pleasure, can give you a pleasure like you've never experienced. It's euphoria, it's bliss, right?
Yeah.
And then there's also this question of, does the tentacle cause destruction? So there's like pleasure and destruction. And both of those could and probably do come from this thing that could grant ultimate bliss or, you know, ultimate mercy, I guess, or complete destruction. And death in the cases of all these people. Death or at least like untold horrors. And that reminds me of the pleasure and pain thing that we talk about with Clive Barker, or like the pleasure versus chaos kind of element. I don't know. I feel like that theme comes up over and over. I don't exactly know the psychology behind it, right? But it does seem to come up over and over in like sex and genre. You know, it always makes me think about like, if I just said to you from an abstract level, talk to me about pleasure versus chaos and like, what does that mean? you know, I think about the human dynamics of people who, say you're in a relationship or you know somebody in a relationship, and maybe it's a really bad relationship, maybe it's even abusive, and they stay in it. And trying to understand, and I guess just to any extent, anybody who stayed in a very contrasty sort of like extreme highs and lows relationship,
mm-hmm.
the idea that it's a great relationship, but it might also destroy your life, you know, sort of that thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a way of speaking about that excitement of putting your hand over a hot stove or that flirtation with these elements of chaos or of destruction that might make pleasure or your other types of euphoria more intense.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's essentially, you know, it's a risk reward scenario.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what a lot of this is you're talking about the idea of, you know, you could play it safe, which is to say, you know, risk nothing, but you guaranteed positive or at more likely, you know, no change, right?
Yeah.
And the higher, it's, you know, it's gambling. The higher the risk, the greater the reward.
Yeah.
To the point where you are risking your own fucking well-being on the chance or just to chase a high, right? That's an addiction.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's that same sort of mentality, I think. But, you know, talking about the pleasure versus pain and chaos spectrum, like, I don't think that comes out of nowhere. Because when you talk about, I mean, you talk about fucking any fetish that graduates past, like, a C+ on interesting,
mm-hmm.
someone's getting a little hurt.
This is Michael's subjective scale. A C+ on Michael's. This is like a new Kinsey scale for us.
You know, it's there's like the everybody's got, you know, some, oh, I'm kinky. I'm really into like feet. It's like, sure. I mean, that's great. But like, don't just call me when someone's getting like whipped, you know, not because I want to be involved, but because that's when the psychology becomes interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you see that we talked about, I don't remember what show, but we talked about fucking safe words. You know why you have safe words?
Because people have different levels.
Yeah.
well, I guess both of pain yeah. and tolerance, but different triggers.
Yeah.
And different, yeah, I guess part of it is thresholds. It's thresholds, it's tolerance, it's triggers. And when you talk about it that way, doesn't it sound a lot like other parts of human psychology?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just sexuality. I mean, I think when you talk about risk versus reward, like, yeah, and there are a lot of gambits just in life that are, you know, would you give up safety and security to take a big swing? I mean, I think you could extrapolate a lot of these themes.
Yeah.
Similarly with the lure, I think these could speak to a lot broader things even outside of sex.
I mean, imagine like a Schrodinger's cat situation where I lead you to a door. And I tell you that there's something that you've never seen before behind that door, and you can't see it ever in your life if you don't go through that door, but you have to let it fuck you.
Yeah, okay. I mean, is this thought experiment going anywhere, or is this just to give me nightmares?
That's a pretty heavy risk-reward scenario. You know,
what's the percent chance that it's a giant animal orgy crater?
Non-zero.
That's
non-zero.
Behind the door?
Non-zero percent.
I also think there's something to just like, hey, movie, show me something I've never seen before, you know?
Right.
All the listeners who grew up on a farm are like, what do you mean never seen before? They didn't even have to, there isn't even a special effect here. We just filmed literally any farm. It's all right. I think we could talk about, you know, there's some interesting cinematography in here. There's also like a theme about bad parenting that just feels like it at least deserves a mention, but we have to go.
Mm-hmm.
So please end the show.
We have a website. It's doublefeature.fm. We also have that other website, patreon.com/doublefeature. It's kind of the whole thing keeping us alive, so...
Vital, vital.
Get your tentacles over to patreon.com. I don't know.
Oh my God. If I could find a way to weave tentacles and to live deliciously, I would never shut up about it. That'd be the whole thing.
Great.
We're going to replace our theme for next year with something about tentacles and living deliciously. I want to get working on that.
We have some executive producers: Henrik Dinter, Abbot of Unreason, Sierra, Tom Leonard, and Tony Gleed. Next time on the show... Oh, okay. Well, here's a sobering moment. Next time on the show, we're going to do Sound of Metal and Jacob's Ladder. Have you had fun today?
Ooh.
Although I haven't seen one of these two movies, and it's the one that I presume is about like a carpenter or a guy who like does windows and can't get like
Jacob's
up
ladder
to the next floors or something.
When he creates the Sound of Metal.
I assume Jacob's Ladder is just some, it's like a combination of Lawnmower Man, but a guy with a ladder.
I mean, you're not terribly far off, but you're far off enough that you should still watch it.
All right.
Make sure you see, you know, the original version of this, of course, where...
Oh, that's right. You were just telling me that there's another
version.
No one
knows there's a remake, but now you know, and don't, that's not the one where...
And I mean, for the record, see the original version of Sound of Metal too.
Yes.
Nobody knows what's going to happen between now and then, but if something happens where it's not the original, go back and watch the one with Riz Ahmed.
Yeah, doublefeature.fm/bagcat might be good for this show.
I forgot that's still there.
Oh, it is very much still there. I use it on a bi-weekly basis at this fucking point.
Great.
Because all films feel like Sound of Metal and Jacob's Ladder to me.
All right.
It's an emotionally intense show, but so, so worth it. And we hope people will actually watch these.
All right. Well, in that case, watch more fucking film.
Okay. Goodbye.